That's the wonderful thing about coming to conferences is all the ideas that come up and that we get all energized to take back and work with, and that's just wonderful. So thank you very much, Dr. McDermott and Dr. Keach. Our next presentation, we're going to take a little bit of a shift, but it looks just wonderful. Teaching Public Policy in Undergraduate Nursing Education, highlights from a decade of public policy projects. So, Dr. Joanne Costello is our next speaker, and she's going to speak for her. There's a few different people that are on this that you're recognized. Joanne Costello is an associate professor at Rhode Island College in the School of Nursing, and has taught public community health nursing there since 1998. She holds a bachelor's in nursing from St. Ansel College in Manchester, New Hampshire, a master's in public and community health nursing from Louisiana State University Medical Center, and a master's in public health from Tulane University, and a PhD in nursing from University of Rhode Island. So let's welcome Joanne Costello.
Good morning, everybody. And I want to say I'm very sheepish about having handouts, and I promised when I come the next time I won't. And I did not put a plant in the audience from South Carolina saying that it's okay to have paper. So that's what I'll disclose to start with. Okay, so today I'm here presenting, but really these projects have been a tapestry that there have been many, many people that have woven this together over the 10 years that I've been there, but also prior to that. In the audience, we have Dr. Carol Shelton, who is a policy person from the start. She actually, her PhD is in health policy from Brandeis University, and she really was the founding mother, I guess, of all of this. Also, we have Dr. Mary Bird in the audience and Dr. Jean Schwager, and several other people who were here originally, but we have had a black cloud over our room, so people have been called back to Rhode Island for various reasons. Others are Lynn Blanchett, Kathy Gremmel, victim of H1N1, and Dr. Patricia Thomas, who had to go home to care for her mother. But everybody has been very much involved in all of this all along. Okay, and I have nothing to disclose, but we also would like to have something to disclose. We're still searching as well. Okay. So just to give you a little bit of background in terms of the context of this, in the early 90s, we had an integrated nursing program, so the specialties were melded together, and we began a public policy project as part of a general working group for students who were seniors. When we, in the late 90s, made our program a specialty focused program, we took on the public policy projects in community health nursing and kind of tweaked it through time, very much looking at our own evaluations as we had more faculty come in and give input, and also students' evaluations, which we have been looking for feedback from students after every one of our public policy projects in terms of continuous improvement. Currently, it is a capstone project for students that they do typically in their last semester. And it has really been a very, as you'll see later, it's been a very empowering project for them, and seems to have brought together the threads of many, many pieces of their learning throughout the program. And I was reminded when and Betty and Ruth were talking, and the question was asked, why, you know, is it the choir that we are speaking to? What is the motivation for some people who don't value policy as much as we do in terms of teaching this sort of thing? People would say sometimes to us, well, yeah, but what does this really have to do with nursing? I think that the AACN, if that is your accreditor, and it is our accreditor, has really brought home to us and validated what we have thought all along, in that a very heavy piece. Actually, two out of the eight essentials are pretty heavily policy focused. And I won't read this to you because I bet you know about this more than you would like to, since the essentials have come out in last year. But the essential five, which is the policy, finance, and regulatory, clearly asks for very specific outcomes that this project has for years helped us to achieve. And then also the number seven, which is the clinical prevention and population health, also integrates very specific aspects of our activities which promote the outcomes that AACN wants to see. In fact, I was at one of the meetings, it was in April of 2008 in Boston, where we were giving input on the essentials document, and we were broken out into groups. That's how they do it. And many people in our group said, I don't know how we'll ever have students achieve this particular, this seems like it's something very far-fetched. I don't know how students will ever achieve this particular outcome. And I said, well, one of the things that we do, and people were very interested. So I would urge you to consider this as something that might be, you may convince your the people who aren't in the choir that policy is important because of our regulators. They're wonderful motivators. These are the next two slides are just our examples from our syllabus, basically, of the clinical or student learning outcomes that actually meet these essential standards. I actually think I might have gone. Okay. Actually, it seems like a slide is missing, but anyway, we actually use the nursing process, but it is a population focus. So we do the assessment and identification of the problem using epidemiological data. We develop the plan and assess the input from key community members. We implement the plan. Sometimes we try to implement the plan and evaluate. So it's very much a carrying through of the nursing process, but on a population-focused level. I see a couple of people from UMass Dartmouth in our audience, and I would applaud Dr. Gail Russell, who, along with Jackie Fawcett, developed a theoretical framework, which actually gives us a lot of credibility theoretically in terms of why is policy really important. There is a four-level theory or framework, the conceptual model for nursing and health policy, and I won't go into a lot of detail because that could be like actually an entire day of discussion. But there are four levels. One level is really the actual practice, kind of direct care practice and influencing policy directly. The second is actually working within a system, an agency system, a hospital system. And then just to give you an idea of what we really focus on, the third level is what we really look at, which are healthcare systems of geopolitical communities, states, and nations. So the students are, some of the RN students particularly want to focus on the second level, which is focusing on things like mandatory overtime, which clearly has an impact on our populations. But we really are urging them to look more toward public health issues versus professional issues. So this was a really nice framework for us. And actually, the last level is humankind. It's global. We haven't actually done that with undergraduates at this point, but I thought that this was a nice, for anybody who's interested in further developing this, this is a nice framework to use. So students work in a group through the entire semester, identifying these problems, working, interviewing key people in the community, and doing presentations. And this is just an example of our brochure that we put out to the entire college community. And also we invite many members of the general community. So we try to make it as multidisciplinary and engaging for all as possible. We also have many students who attend who are either, you know, in the beginning stages, sophomores, juniors, so that they can be exposed to this and be kind of percolating what their ideas might be for their projects later. It was really fun for us to kind of take a trip down memory lane and think of, over the past 10 years, what have some of the presentations been that we would like to highlight. And when we thought about it, we really did have four different categories of public policy presentations that kind of emerged. The first being social justice and vulnerable populations, which was very much is very much part of what we try to get across to students, as I'm sure that you do in your work as well. Preventable disease, so nutrition, childhood obesity, tobacco, those kinds of things. Environmental health, things like lead, mercury. And then lastly, contemporary topics, things that have come up, like, for example, texting while driving, or distracted driving, as some students call it, and also risks for children on the internet. So, just things, the issue du jour as far as contemporary topics. So what I'd like to do next is bring you through several of the choices that students have made in terms of what their public policy presentations were. And these are, for the most part, their actual presentation sheets, although we couldn't, because it was older versions, we couldn't always do that. But so the first example is breakfast. They actually try to have very clever little names, like Ban the Tran, for trans fats. And so this one is Breakfast for Better Brains, alliteration there. Supporting children through universal breakfast. Okay. And this one was about utility shutoffs left out in the cold. And students who participated in this one actually approached the director of the Department of Health along with several other community advocates, and were able to get a bill passed to not have shutoffs if families had. We actually tried for 6 years old, but to not have shutoffs if there was a child one or younger in the home, which I know there are many states that have much older than that. I'm ashamed that we are from a state that is, 1 year old. It actually has been increased to 2 years old since that time. Evictions provided by economic downturn, which was really for about newly homeless, which we have a lot of in Rhode Island. I bet that is the same in many other places. We actually have a place called Tent City where people have been starting their own little community under a bridge in Rhode Island because they didn't want to be serviced by some of the existing homeless shelters. Lost in the shuffle, the insanity of mental health care. So this is really the lack of access and system that we have that does not serve people well. Uncovering the dark side of health care, shedding light on medical errors, which was looking at system changes versus blaming individuals participating in the system. Termination of pregnancy, or TOP talk. Which again was be like a contemporary topic, and this was based on a bill that was submitted to the Rhode Island legislature to not allow nurses to counsel people about the option of termination of pregnancy, which did not pass, incidentally. The global health care waiver, and this is kind of another Rhode Islandism. We are actually, Vermont and Rhode Island are the only states that have kind of had exemptions from using the Medicaid rules, and we have been given a block of money to allocate in creative ways, hopefully safe ways for our populations. But this was something that the students looked at in terms of long-term care placement for the elderly. Protect our clients, increase compliance, which I don't love the compliance word, but this was an interesting twist to it all in that many of the, or a very small percentage of nurses in Rhode Island or healthcare providers were actually getting immunizations for flu and putting clients at risk. And so this was looking at our decreasing risk by increasing the utilization of vaccines by nurses. And this is another contemporary issue. This was mandatory internet crime education for school-age children. Lead, It Will Weigh You Down, which was an environmental health piece. And actually, another interesting part of this was a bill we really had quite a few laws about lead in Rhode Island, but none with teeth in them. And so we continue to have a very high prevalence and incidence of lead poisoning in children. And we had a bill pass the lead mitigation law several years ago, and actually we had students from Rhode Island College who testified. Many of them are NTBSN students, and they were singled out by Senator Roberts, who was on the hearing committee, as being very voices of people who really knew about what was happening and assisting to get this legislation passed. And actually, one of the people who was involved in this project currently serves on the board of the Childhood Lead Action Project, having been interested in it as a result of her work with this project. Smoke-free bride, and this is not allowing adults to smoke in cars when children are riding in the cars. So an environmental tobacco protection. And then this is a favorite of students. Everybody wants to do childhood obesity. What's the big deal about childhood obesity? Another preventable disease one. So what I'll do now is just take you through our rubric and give you some examples of samples of projects as we kind of go through our rubric. So one of the things is the extent and evidence of the health problem are documented with epidemiological data. And the students have become very sophisticated, many times better than their instructors in terms of how they prepare. And they actually really have a very broad view of health. So when they are looking at, this was actually lead, when they're looking at problems with lead and knowing that large numbers of children who are low SES are affected, they have looked at poverty levels of children in those areas. And this was looking at foreclosures for newly homeless people and the numbers. They actually had a nice, almost John Snow-like spot map of where in Rhode Island the highest number of foreclosures were. This is the Medicaid Global Waiver, looking at the increase expenditures over a very recent period of time and the increase in those, which has been a great problem for us because of our decreased funds in the Medicaid system. It's been very serious. School breakfasts, looking at the number of children who participate, and we have what we call core cities. We have five core cities where 25% of children or above live below poverty level, and so these are the participation in our core cities. And what we were trying for was actually universal participation in school breakfast, so children would not be stigmatized. Okay, the second piece, the second part of the rubric that I wanted to show you was we do associate this with Healthy People 2010. I have found that sometimes Healthy People 2010 does not work as well for if we're looking at the social injustice and the vulnerable populations. And so some students have used more the human rights framework for that. And that's actually my utility group this semester. Searched high and low in Healthy People and have chosen to use the human rights aspect. So for example, this was a group that did gang violence, and so they looked at the reduction in adolescents carrying weapons to school and what the target and baseline was. And another group looking at children, secondhand exposure to smoke for children. So looking at Healthy People 2010 in terms of whatever their particular topic was. I think this is probably the strongest aspect of the project, and it may be that we have this little state where we actually probably are related to our legislators and key people in the community versus just having people email us back. There's usually a student in the group that says, oh, my father went to school with Senator Murphy, or, so we really do have an incredible amount of access to people. And we feel like this is not a book assignment or a computer assignment. This is a get out there and interview and actually meet with people assignment. So it's very fun for us, I think, as faculty, because after three projects a year or sometimes more for all these years, we meet so many people, and it makes our jobs very stimulating as well. This is Henry Shelton, who is the director of the executive director of the George Wiley Center, a community organizer, and he is for universal breakfast and utilities, he is the go-to person and will hook you up with whoever you need to know. So for example, my students this semester are doing utilities, and we have met with a couple who are in their 80s who had shutoffs, as, you know, examples of real people who had this happen, who he was able to assist in getting it turned on, and what was that experience like. He has also introduced us to a community organizer who is actually suing the government, or suing the utilities companies, in order to get restitution. And also the PUC, he knows when the hearings are and gets us involved in all of that. So, and he actually just happens to be the husband of my dear friend Carol Shelton. So so again, we are all related. I can call Henry anytime. Others are the director of the Department of Elderly Affairs, and she willingly met with us, you know, with eight students and myself, in a post-clinical conference. We went to them at the Department of Elderly Affairs, and she says, "My sister's a nurse. I love nurses. Come on over." So, and this was about the Medicaid Global Waiver. One of the things that we did was gang violence, and found that the Institute for the Study and Practice of Nonviolence was a wonderful group to partner with. And so they are actually street workers who have, many of whom have been involved with criminal activity, gang activity earlier in their lives, and are very strong individuals who have turned things around and are actually working with youth. And so we have been involved with them. And of course, the wife of the executive director also happens to be in our nursing program. So that was, so now I have Tenny Gross's cell phone number. So. Senator Elizabeth Roberts is a legislator. She's actually currently the Lieutenant Governor of Rhode Island, but she has been a great advocate of ours. She comes to our alumni weekend, and she has spoken to students multiple times. So she really has been a great advocate, and has been somebody that when she was a senator, state senator, and now as a Lieutenant Governor, has been very heavily involved in health issues. So she, oral health, which nobody isn't very sexy and nobody really thought much of, she actually got that to happen in Rhode Island for children. So, I think that we've hooked up with many of the strongest people. Representative Eileen Naughton, who's an attorney and state senator, she was the director of the Finance Committee and was somebody that, again, willingly met with us in the Senate conference room and spoke to students and spent actually 2 hours with us. She's a good talker, like many politicians are. So they were worried about having questions for her, and I said, no worries. She will take care of that. The next piece is consequences to society. So with this, students find not just physical consequences, but also social, psychological, and other financial. So this was actually about homelessness. And this was actually about mental health. This was the one about not being able to access proper mental health services and mental health care. And some of this was related to homelessness, some of it to incarceration, substance abuse, unemployment. So again, we look at very broad, the students sometimes want to just give you a listing of symptoms. These are the outcomes, but we want them to really think a little bit more macro. And this is an example for the top one, which was termination of pregnancy. And if there were a gag law, what might be some consequences of this? So. And they do a community diagnosis, which we usually do as a group and assist them with because they're not used to the group part of it. So just a couple of examples of that. This is the one with healthcare workers getting immunizations, basically looking at, the risks and then the as evidenced by, which usually is morbidity and mortality for us. Okay, and then we always look at legislation. What is it on a local level mostly, and also if applicable on a national level? We want them to actually select a bill. What is it that is something that relates to health? And so with the termination of pregnancy, we looked federally at the refusal clause and the gag rule. And then also on the state level, this was the bill which did not pass that prohibited the use of public funds for counseling, encouraging, assisting, or performing abortions. And then this was a bill which was for statewide universal breakfast. And actually what happened was there were only some of the core cities, which I said were 25% poverty rate or above, that participated. And so this was to make that any city that had a was a core city that had a high poverty rate would be mandated to participate in universal school breakfasts. Okay, so the impact, we always want to figure out how does this relate back to nursing. Some of them do, they do it in different ways, sometimes looking at macroscopic implications, microscopic implications, sometimes research, policy, practice implications. So the ones that I'll show you, this one looks at practice, and this was actually the flu vaccination of healthcare providers, looking at what are the actual practice implications. Same thing for policy solutions. What should we be doing policy-wide? So trying to bring them from that role to the larger picture. And we evaluate, as I said, it's very much, we do this continuous quality improvement thing where we say, what do you think, on an ongoing basis in a systematic way, and we look at what is it that they think is valuable and how can we make this better. So we give them this little survey at the end, and what we're trying to do is sort of sow the seeds or grow people who will be politically active as they are become professional nurses. And we're actually finding we have many people who are, not all of them, but many, many people who are very much have grown in that role and are participating. Many leaders who I think have been, or I hope have been influenced by this. So whether they're more likely to contact the legislature, to testify at a hearing, and you can see that's on the low side. Some people love that, but many of them are a little anxious. Have a better understanding of the political process, more likely to work with community groups. And we actually are doing a survey with one of the committees at our school looking at how engaged people are in professional organizations, in community organizations, and we have found that we have a very high level, like 33% of the people. Well, of course, there's the selection issue. They want to brag, and they are responding to the survey. But we have a very high percentage who are engaged in not only professional organizations, but other community organizations, such as the Childhood Lead Action Project and other things. And it's always really fun for us to read the narrative comments, the qualitative comments as well, talking about learning a lot about the process of creating law and advocacy, how easy it is to get involved with public policy. People say, you know, Henry Shelton, when he speaks to us, always says at the State House, which was that beautiful building that you saw on the first page, this is your house. You belong here. And I think that people get a little bit of a comfort level and realize that these are not people that have, you know, something that they don't have, that they actually can contribute a great deal into participating in this process. That it triggered them to think about different angles, especially our RN to BSN students seem to say, I thought I was coming in to learn a little bit more about home health, and this is really changing the way I think personally and professionally. So that is, you know, very, very critical and empowering. Some people talking about critical thinking, that they love nursing in that they're using critical thinking, but they're using it here in such a different way. That they know, we actually require them, we have several pieces of this. You're just seeing the public policy presentation part, but we have also a legislative assignment where they have to contact their legislator about a specific issue. And so they all figure out who it is and how they can do it in 3 seconds. So if something comes up, they can shoot an email off and feel that that's something they're comfortable doing. Another part is, you know, this whole problem we have with lateral violence and not being able to work well in groups. We feel like the process is just as important as the product in this, and we help them through role modeling and through facilitating to have a, most of the time, very interesting and constructive group process. So we actually give a grade for group process, just in case anybody's interested in that. So play well in the sandbox is the, you know, our rule for them. They also have learned a lot more about the legislative process in Rhode Island. They feel in control of that by the time they're finished. And then this is our favorite one. I learned that our voices are important and that as nurses, we can really make a difference. So again, that empowerment piece. So there are many general benefits to this, we think, besides just them learning about policy, not just them learning about policy, but where are additional benefits. The teamwork piece is extremely important. As I said, we actually give them 20% of their grade is how they interact constructively as a group. And we have an actual rubric for it that measures those things. They are very curious and intrigued by the instructor or teacher working with them as more of a coach than a judge. And we all, I think just temperament-wise, that's how we work. And but that has been something that I think that they have appreciated and has helped them to grow in their role as they are about to graduate. So we do that intentionally. We do a lot of, you know, most of our post-conferences are spent really collaborating with them on how are we going to get this done and what can we do together. The empowering of students that some of them who really did not see, thought that, oh, politics, it's dirty, I really don't want to become involved in it, they really get jazzed up about being able to actually make a difference. We have really, you know, several of the bills that are extremely important in Rhode Island, like I said, the one where utility shutoffs and lead mitigation, students have testified about tobacco. We were the 7th state in the country to have no tobacco in public places. So they've all been involved in that, and word gets out, and I think it's been very valuable. Individual students finding their voice, and we are fortunate enough at Rhode Island College that we have a lot of people who are from other countries. We have, you know, my clinical group sometimes have one person from Russia, one from Guatemala, one from Liberia, you know, so we have a lot of diversity. And many of those people, as well as people who are from lower SES, they're the first in their family to go to college and that kind of thing, don't feel like they should be the ones talking, that they should, they'll help to prepare the presentation, but they would rather not speak because they're not good enough. And we really encourage that everybody has a valuable voice and that you all have your 3 minutes of fame. It's not a very long part. And so we encourage them and really make it be that we're not judging them, you know, that you have to speak like President Obama to be a speaker. You just have to be who you are, and it's more of a personal best. If you achieved a little better of a presentation style than you had in the beginning, then we are very, you know, give them many warm fuzzies and encouragement for that. And I think that helps them to find their own voice. Also, technology learning stretch, and it is for me. I'm not a very techie person. I learn something every time we do a public policy presentation because they're, you know, they have a lot of creative ways of using technology, both for accessing information as well as for putting the presentation together. And I think I did skip influencing legislators' perceptions of nursing, which is a very, very important one. Again, Rhode Island being a small place, every student, we have 150 that come through every year, every student has to write to their legislator. And so I think we let legislators know that we are not just interested in mandatory overtime, but we are interested in lead issues. We are interested in, you know, trans fat. We are interested in utility shutoffs. All of the things that comprise factors that influence the health of our population, not just our own professional interests. And I think that that has been something that many people in the legislature know about Rhode Island College nursing students. Also, social work students. We have very active social work students as well. So where are we now? We are hoping to work together with other disciplines. Again, we have a strong school of social work, and we would like to broaden our grasp a little bit and have involve social work in the in our projects in the future. Also, a lot of the lingo in the new essentials document speaks to evidence-based. So we would like to probably capture a little bit more hard data about what it is that we're doing and how it is that this, what we're doing translates into political activity and mobilization in the future. And little old Rhode Island College, we are a very small place, and we're tremendously honored that the AACN gave out 4 awards for innovations this year. And one was to the University of Kentucky, which was the Academic Health Center institution. One was Small School, which was York College of Pennsylvania. and a private school without an academic center was PACE. And we received, you know, out of like quite a lot of applicants, I think about 50 or so, we received an award for small school without an academic institution for this particular project. So we were very, very happy about that. And Mary got to go to the AACN conference and receive that in October. So I don't know if I went over. I think I'm good. Okay. And any questions? Oh, thank you.
A wonderful presentation. It's just wonderful. Some questions?
Thanks.
Yes.
Structural determinants of health. Students get very, very excited. It's very expanding, very much as you describe. But something I run into the difficulty about for a nurse, especially a new nurse coming out of an undergraduate program, they, public policy, professional issues, and the like, it's actually a second job for them. They're working nights in the ICUs. I even see this in our trying to figure out what their professional issues are and take them somewhere to have an effect on a larger scale is another job for them, and they don't do it. How do you keep the fire burning when they get done and they go to work?
Well, oh, she does. Okay, good. I'd love to hear the answer.
We have to link our students with our professional organizations who are already doing it.
Yes.
ANA is so sadly underrepresented among us, our nurses, and are we erasing? This is our avenue as nurses.
Yep.
It's already set up. We don't have to recreate the wheel, but we have to join on.
Yeah.
So
they see that as another job.
Well,
too.
All I hear is how much does it cost and what's it going to get me?
Right.
So that mentality of nurses needs to change. It is the social justice. It is that there's power in unity.
Mm-hmm.
We're not little, isolated entities. We need to join the organization that's already there doing the work and support that work and add our voice to that work.
We actually pay for a couple of memberships to the Oregon Public Health Association to try to foster the kind of thing, but frankly, I think we're not very successful.
There's such resistance. And why is that?
I think our students, I think nursing students really are doing so many things that you're right, it is very hard to engage them. Some of the things that, I think the organizations is a really important one. Cost is extremely important for our students as well. We have the Rhode Island Public Health Association, which is quite inexpensive and actually represents more public health social justice issues versus the professional issues. And so we have tried to get, particularly our graduate students have, they attended the annual meeting with all of us faculty. And so I think that's one thing. And then another one is even things like voting. We try to say, who's registered to vote? And we have this actually political astuteness survey that we do before they go through the process and then at the end. And I think we're also educating them by seeing what's on here, what can I do? But being registered to vote, voting for people who represent the views of what you believe in. So it doesn't take you, a lot of time. You don't have to be on the board. But one of the questions on our legislative assignment is, does this representative represent your views on health issues? And so they think I'm voting for this person. And, he voted, he is a labor person who did not support anything or did not sponsor any legislation that has anything to do with health. And so do you really want that person? So voting is another one. I also think that the email thing, we have them actually email a senator. That doesn't take very long. And, they can, if they just read the Providence Journal, our paper, every day there's something to do with health that's on the agenda, and if they know who their legislator is and how they can, connect with that person on whatever it is, lead, right now Medicaid waiver, so So I see a hand over here. Yeah.
I think in looking at the perspective of a nurse that's working in a hospital situation,
yes,
they're more the probably the only prime thing outside of getting putting in your time and surviving is the labor issues, the labor union issues, because it's all about labor and how much of your pay is going to go pay your union dues. It isn't until you're actually possibly if you're just an hour ADRN to get into your VS and completion portion that you're actually going to realize that there's a life, a whole other world
yep.
beyond that perfection that you had to achieve as a student nurse and a mm-hmm. RN. So, but it's not until then or when you're actually working in a public venue
yep.
that all these policy issues become near and dear.
I think actually for some of our students who really are in the lower SES, they live in the areas mm-hmm. that we go and visit, that we say, you know, take an escort there. They get it. They have had the utilities shut off. They have, you know, they don't have health insurance because, you know, they have just the school health insurance. So they get it because they live it. So some of our students, you know, we're privileged to work with people who really do understand and aren't, we're not having to explain, you know, the unnatural causes to. They live under natural causes. So
this isn't so much a question as maybe a thought in response to yours, but also an idea. Prior session, but I think the heart of it is having them attached to something that they have a passion about.
Yeah.
And so if they do that as an undergraduate, or in the case of the environmental, if they see something that really alarms them,
yes.
then they might carry that forward. So
yes.
maybe they won't join the professional organization for that, but they might connect to an organization because they learn so much about the whole issue, whether it's distracted driving or utilities.
Right, right. I think that's a really good point.
So that's a way to, as you move it forward, to maybe, you know,
yeah.
help them to think about how they would then take this into their future.
Right. And they get to choose their own, you know, we spend the first several weeks of the semester figuring out, well, what is it that we're going to do? And there's a vote on it, there's a lot of conflict and discussion, and it becomes a pretty big deal. So they are definitely engaged. They don't always choose what I want them to choose sometimes. They. You know, they keep on choosing the same things. Childhood obesity again, okay. But so it's not always, you know, but we do. But you're right. I think them actually being the deciders is
but,
the...
But Lauren, an organization or a venue
yeah.
within ANA, for example,
right.
some little spot to attach them to.
ANA or, has environmental.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
like, everything's
yeah.
under ANA.
Right.
But I know that. It's my blonde. But what I'm saying
yeah.
is that if that link is clear... For
yep.
them to go from, I got so fired up about this, and
yeah.
before you go out the door, it's this piece.
Yep.
Right.
And how do I take this forward with a low cost and a...
Depends on the state where you're at.
Low
Pennsylvania does not have any labor
the lady,
unions.
The lady in the van.
State
yeah, we have to lady in the van. No, we can,
yeah,
we can do some.
Issue.
Yeah, we have plenty of time, actually.
Yeah,
10 minutes.
But I think, Joanne, you're yeah. giving them such important skills that, you know, they may then go to their critical care unit for a couple of years, but something may fire them up later
mm-hmm.
and they'll have those skills.
Right,
so.
Right. Actually, even the group that was probably the most fired up of anybody that I've ever had was the lead group. And it was a huge amount of RNs in that group, the highest percentage of RNs, some of whom had worked in pediatrics. And they were, even though they took care of them in the hospital, they didn't necessarily see all those things. When they started learning more about it, they could not believe that in some areas in the West End of Providence, 1 in 3 kids had been affected. And they were outraged. They took this to a very high level because they took it, you know, as you said, Jean, very personally. And one of them, like I said, is on the board now. You know, she's on the board of the Childhood Lead Action Project. And she works nights in the ICU, and, you know, she supports, actually, she has a family that she's the only one that seems to be working. Everybody lives with her, but she can come once a quarter and spend an evening, you know, putting the cause.
Like somebody
absolutely.
The trauma ICU responding to the lack of phone calls in Rhode Island.
Right. I always say, everybody, you know, even if you choose to do ICU, ER, whatever it is, every nurse should be a community nurse. We need, you know, you should have, it's a core philosophy, it's a lens, it's not, you know, just a content. So.
There was a question in the back.
Well, I was just going to think, I want to thank you for your presentation. And one thing we have tried, because our students have diverse opinions, even within social justice, they can be on opposite ends. So we have
that support their philosophy and one that doesn't. So as the push-outs come, it helps them think through the issue before they decide which one to push. So the students are very IT savvy, and they we use that political student survey, which
yeah.
shocks them. They
yeah.
all do badly on it.
Yes.
But that...
They're ashamed to turn it in. Right.
Talk about, they sort of shape that that might be a reasonable thing rather than pushing, you know, give some money like that. Student loans, hey, this is free, it's easy, you can send it to your computer, and someone else sends you opposing opinions.
Right.
I give them the APHA site just because I'm familiar with it, and then I show them the site Families USA. There's one, I can't remember, National League of Women. So just some to show them the push-outs and, you know, trying to get a conservative site there. So we have students whose fathers are on boards of pharmaceutical companies
yep.
in these conversations.
Yeah.
And that way, it's saying, pick your politics, it doesn't matter, but just do something. And here's an easy IT way that you as young students might, and it's part of our public health nursing course. This is very
yeah.
exciting. But it's just, you know,
I'm
doing 2 or 3 hours on public policy.
Right.
This is one piece.
Yeah, this is real life living it.
Very much.
Yeah.
They don't need to
go. We do the score before and after,
the
so that's neat.
Mm-hmm. That
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Diane?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
First, I wanted to congratulate Joanne and her colleagues for the award that they received from AACS. That's very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I just wanted to ask a question related to the assignment. If there's not already a policy in place or legislation that's already been put forth, have your students been involved in developing the policy or legislation to go forward related to the social justice issue, the environmental issue, the health protection issues?
We have not. Maybe you guys can help me.
I think that they have proposed solutions that they would have.
But we've never actually, to my knowledge, gotten. Oh, Mary?
One of my groups did talk about obesity years ago before it was a huge issue, and they were actually involved with the state legislature just in terms of getting a resolution passed. This is a
study
issue that the health
yeah.
department should begin to address.
Yeah.
So sometimes they are kind of on the cutting edge of issues.
And we did actually kind of, we worked with Betsy Dannigan, who's a nurse, JD, in Rhode Island, and with Ban the Tran. It was New York and California had introduced a couple of things to not have trans fats in restaurants. And Betsy was willing to work with us on it. But the thing is that the semester ends and then the students aren't there. And the next group, I wanted to choose that, but they get to choose what they want. And so nobody else wanted to do it. And I, of course, couldn't carry the candle alone. So that didn't happen. But we, you know, they have ideas, but it's sometimes we can't always carry it through.
Good. On behalf of the audience, I think that we want to thank all our presenters this morning for sharing your knowledge, your inspiration, your role modeling, and how you are making such a difference in our health. And thank you all for attending. This concludes our session. Thanks.
Yeah. I Thank you.
because then we also get into the discussion of different